30. When Parry showed up in the High Hab 3 days later, she had almost forgotten why he had come. It took several free-falling moments of mental stall before she remembered the Bagley case. "Maybe you're right," she said dolefully. "Maybe we are better off letting this one sleep." Parry looked disappointed. "That doesn't sound like the Bella I spoke to 3 days ago." He was right. It didn't. It was a measure of how thoroughly the cube had upset her ordered view of things. "I'm sorry," she said, offering Parry a seat amidst the shifting green radiance of her fish tanks. "I'm the last person who should be talking like that." Parry removed the red cap and scratched at his wiry tangle of thin grey hairs. He looked at her with one eye narrowed. "Are you all right, Bella?" "I'm fine," she said, a touch over emphatically. "It's just been a funny few days. A funny few weeks, come to think of it. Mike coming back. What happened at the party? I'm glad you talked to Sveta. Did you put Mike up to that?"
"Absolutely not,"
Bella said, alarmed that Parry had even considered the possibility. "I went into the Arboretum determined I wasn't even going to make eye contact with Svetlana. I was doing pretty well, too." I think she felt the same way.
"I could have killed Mike,"
Bella said, "which is saying a lot, given how long we'd all waited to have him back." If it's any consolation, Svieta wasn't exactly thrilled either. He told her he'd arranged a one-on-one with McKinley. He never mentioned that you'd be sitting there as well.
"How is she now?"
"Deeply, deeply relieved. I'll be truthful. I think you both had your reasons for not wanting to see each other again."
"I can't disagree with that."
"But by the same token, I don't think either of you really wanted it to continue forever. You know, even in the darkest days, when Svetlana couldn't even stand hearing your name mentioned in her presence..." Parry stalled and looked at her, seeking permission to continue.
"Go on," she said warily.
"Well, she still wouldn't tolerate anyone criticizing you. I mean, it was all right for her. She could accuse you of anything under the sun. But if anyone else had the temerity to do it, woe betide them. She was the only one who had the God-given right to criticize Bella Lind. No one else had earned it." Bella smiled slightly.
"I can believe that. Maybe I felt the same way at times."
"If it's any consolation, I know how much it meant to Svieta that you two were able to talk. I know she could have ended the silence years ago."
"So could I,"
Bella interjected.
"But you didn't,
and neither did Svieta. Maybe you both wanted the other to make the first move, or maybe you were both afraid of what would happen if you did speak, that the sky would fall or something like that. Well, I'm here to tell you it didn't, and I think the world is a better place now than it was a week ago."
"I think so too,"
Bella said, but she heard something in Parry's voice that unsettled her.
"What is it?"
she asked uneasily.
"It's about Meredith Bagley," he said, "about the murder investigation."
"I know. That's why I asked you to come here." They sat and stared at each other. On several occasions, Parry seemed about to speak, but then pulled back from whatever he had in mind. Bella remained silent, forcing herself not to prompt him. Parry looked down and closed his eyes, as if seeking some higher strength. Finally, he looked up at her and said very softly,
"You have the right names."
"I know. I've always known. It was just a question of putting together enough evidence. I can help you. Only if you can prove that the logs were tampered with. I can do better than that. I concealed the evidence. I doctored the files to protect those three men." She heard the words, but she did not want to believe them.
"No,"
she said. "I called you here because you might have known how someone else got away with it, not because you did it. You struck lucky, Bella, that's all."
"No,"
she said again. "You can't have done it. You would never do this."
"But I did."
Slowly, the possibility that he might be telling the truth began to sink in.
"They murdered her horribly. You would never have wanted any part of that."
"I didn't." Again, Parry paused to collect his thoughts. "I'd always known there was bad blood against Meredith, ever since you asked her to help you, forced her to act against Svetlana. Wasn't Tom Crabtree enough for them? They killed Crabtree in blind rage. This was always going to be more premeditated. It was 5 years after our arrival on Janus. They wanted to show that they had long memories."
"Did you know it was coming?" I thought her life might be in danger and I tried to warn her. Advised her to get work in another section, away from Svetlana's loyalists. She didn't listen. She thought I was the one threatening her. But I had no idea when they were going to strike, or who was going to do it. Bella allowed herself a moment's relief.
So you had no part in the killing itself?
Death is death. I only ever wanted an end to it.
She stared at him with appalled incomprehension. But if you didn't approve of the Bagley murder, why did you doctor the EVA logs? Those men could have been brought to justice 43 years ago.
I didn't want them brought to justice.
I don't understand.
You remember what it was like in those days. Every pair of hands mattered. We were barely holding on. He was right. It was a long time ago, but she could still remember what it had been like in that hard first decade.
But justice, she said plaintively. Justice should have been done. They shouldn't have been allowed to get away with it.
They've spent every day since worrying that they'd be discovered. I told them I'd concealed the evidence of who was in that EVA party, but I always made it clear that the evidence could be retrieved again if I deemed it necessary. Bella's mind ran through the implications.
Didn't it occur to them to kill you?
Wouldn't have helped. For all they knew, I'd told Svetlana, or someone else I trusted. So they've lived out their lives in a state of constant worry, Bella said.
Haven't we all?
It's lasted a lot longer for those men. It's still going on. He scratched at his mustache. For 15 years it's been common knowledge that the Bagley case was open again. I doubt that the two survivors have gone a day since then without wondering when they'll hear that knock on the door.
Why now, Parry?
He offered her a consoling smile. You'd have got there in the end, even if you didn't necessarily like where it took you. Then you'd have been arresting me. Parry opened his hands in surrender, whereas I've come to you freely.
You deleted a log file, Parry. You didn't kill Meredith Bagley.
I concealed a crime.
You did it to help Crabtree, so we wouldn't lose another 3 lives.
That's what I'll tell the tribunal, whether or not they believe it. He shrugged. It doesn't matter now. Let the tribunal decide.
I can't do this, Bella said.
Do you want justice or not?
Of course I want justice, just not this way. You've been good to me, Parry, good to us all. It can't end like this.
It has to. I've come to you, not the other way around. The choice isn't yours. It's mine. Bella felt sick.
What about Svetlana? She asked. What does she think about all this?
She doesn't know.
Oh, no.
Bella closed her eyes, willing someone to come in and take over from her, tell her that she had nothing to fear, that everything was going to work out all right in the end.
I can't do this,
she said, so quietly that she doubted Parry had heard her at all. But he had.
Be brave, he said. Do the right thing.
You're telling me to be brave? She asked incredulously. In some already resigned part of her mind, Bella knew that she had no choice. She allowed Parry to return to Svetlana for 48 hours. As he left the high hab, she gave him her assurance that she would have him called before the tribunal. But 2 days was long enough for doubts to circle. The case had already lain dormant for long periods since it had been reopened. If Bella were to tell the others that she had drawn another blank and needed time to explore other leads, time that might easily stretch to months or years, no one would have thought it suspicious. Each time the doubts arose, she crushed them and forced resolve upon herself, knowing that she must finish what she had started. And for a little while that was enough. And then the doubts began circling again. After a day, she heard from Svetlana. From her tone of voice, Bella knew instantly that Parry had spoken to her.
I have to see you, Svetlana said.
Bella should have refused to take the call, and having taken it, she should have refused to meet with Svetlana. But when she reached for the strength of mind to do that, there was nothing there.
Where?
She asked.
You tell me, Bella.
I have to be at Underhole in 4 hours. I'm due Skyside. I can meet you in Sugimoto's in the plaza. Bella was there on time, traveling alone except for a haunt. The haunt was a BI robot stealthed for maximum discretion, a paper-thin thing like a full-sized origami figure. It trod silently beside her, semi-transparent as a ghost image in the corner of her eye, folded into knife-edged invisibility when she was still. Haunts were technology from the last days before the cut-off, troublesome to manufacture, even with the latest Forge-Vat protocols. Sugimoto's was all wangwood screens, ornamental fans, miniature rock gardens, and delicate watercolors. Judy Sugimoto had opened the Japanese restaurant in the early years of the Transit Plaza, content to do quiet business until the population curve ramped through the roof, which it would soon. The place was in its usual state of near-emptiness. Bella spotted Svetlana in a corner booth, finishing off a dish of thick-lipped, thuggish fugu pufferfish. Bella ordered a glass of sake for herself. She had no appetite. "I know what this is about," she said, as she settled into the booth. Through its curved window they had a dizzying view of the Transit Plaza, with its intersecting geometries of maglev tubes and sky-side-bound elevator shafts. After a long pause, Svetlana said, "I don't condone what happened to Meredith Begley. I'd have been surprised if you did." Svetlana cast an uneasy eye at the haunt as it folded and changed color to blend into the seat. "Those men deserved to be punished for what they did to her. But Perry didn't do what he did to protect those men. He did it to protect all of us." Bella sipped at the sake. "At least you accept that Perry was involved." "He told me he was. Did you expect him to lie?" The haunt stiffened at the aggression in the other woman's voice. "I only meant that it might be a lot for you to take in," Bella said. "I never said it wasn't. Svetlana, I came to see you voluntarily. Please don't take that tone with me." Svetlana pushed a chopstick into the remains of the pufferfish and shook her head, disappointed as much, it appeared to Bella, with her own actions as with Bella's. "I want you to reconsider," she said at length. "Reconsider justice? There are other kinds of justice. You know the names now. Perry's given you that much." "Yes," Bella said carefully. "Then isn't that enough? You have one line of evidence from Ash Murray that points to these three men." "Ash Murray is dead." Svetlana dismissed her objection with a stab of her chopstick. "No dice, Bella. You can bring him back with one signature on the right form. It still wouldn't be enough for a conviction. You have another witness now. Perry will testify that he saw that log, that he knew the three men were on that shift. And the fact that he wiped that self-same log? It doesn't have to come out. The tribunal would get to the bottom of it sooner or later," Bella said. "They'd want to know more. How he saw the names. Why he didn't mention it sooner. And even if the tribunal doesn't figure it out, there's still the problem of the other two men. They know what Parry did. Do you honestly think they'll go down silently? They still look up to Parry. If they looked up to him that much, they wouldn't have killed Meredith. They won't betray him. Svetlana, he's already betrayed them by coming to see me. As far as I'm concerned, all bets are off. You'd have found Perry sooner or later." The sake nibbled the edge of her thoughts. "Let's get one thing straight. I have, and continue to have, nothing but respect and admiration for Parry Boyce in all the years of my exile." "Here we go," Svetlana said, rolling her eyes. "Hear me out. This isn't about you, Svieta, or even about me. It's about Parry, and that one lifeline of sanity he offered me. Other people were kind to me. Axford, Nick, Jim, of course. But it was Parry who drove out there. It was Parry who brought me the fish tank. It was Parry who left me with one microscopic shred of self-respect." "He trusted you," Svetlana said. "He came to you voluntarily, so that you would know the truth, believing that you would have the good sense to bury it." From where I was sitting, it looked very much like a confession, as if Parry expected me to arrest him. That wasn't how he meant it. "I can't go second-guessing hidden intentions. I'm running an investigation. I was hoping to find the man who deleted those files, and to punish him. I can't stop just because it turns out that he's a friend, or because he had noble motives."
"You could if you wanted to."
13 years in power really taught you very little," Bella said, closing a shutter on the little window of friendship that had opened up between them. She turned to the haunt. "We're done here." The robot emerged from its camouflage, peeling itself from the chair.
Bella, please,
Svetlana pleaded. Bella did not look back. She left the restaurant and took the first outbound elevator.
This is a nice surprise, McKinley said, expressing enthusiasm with an exuberant swish of tractor fronds.
The other two aliens present, Kanchenjunga and Dalagiri, kept their usual discreet vigil at the rear.
I wasn't expecting to see you up here again quite so soon after Mike's revival.
Jim Chisholm looked at her concernedly. Everything's all right, isn't it?
There's no problem with Mike, Bella said. He's settling in very well, as far as I can tell.
The party was an excellent idea.
Chisholm kept his arms folded into the capacious sleeves of his gown. His hair was a little longer and whiter than Bella remembered from the last time she'd seen him, his beard a little fuller and shot through with white at the corners of his mouth. But as always, time seemed to pass much more slowly in the embassy than it did in Crabtree.
I'm sorry I couldn't make it down, but I didn't want anyone to think I might be trying to hog the limelight.
That's all right. I'd have liked to have seen you. There's a lot we could have talked about, but I appreciate that you had your reasons.
I'm sure Mike will do fine in any case, and I hear that the party was successful in other ways.
If you mean Svetlana and me.
He nodded sagely. I was encouraged by the news. Let's hope some small good comes of it.
Yes, let's, Bella said tartly. It was over, she knew. It would only be a matter of time before the news reached the embassy. A deceitful moment of thaw between two endless winters.
Perhaps you'd like to discuss the scheduling of another rejuvenation, McKinley asked.
Ask me again in 10 years.
The alien formed a half-hearted high-res grid with its optic fronds, lashing them together in the sloppy manner of a poorly made basket.
It was McKinley signaled that she had his attention.
What is it, Bella? Would you like some time alone to talk to Jim in private?
That's kind, she said, and an hour ago I might have said yes. But there's no reason for you not to hear this as well. It would get back to you in the end, after all.
Does this concern us, then?
Yes, she said, and felt a wash of dizziness pass over her, the feeling that she was horribly out of her depth, far from home and way off the script.
Forgive me, McKinley. This might be considered indelicate, but there are a few things I've been meaning to ask.
Chisholm cleared his throat. Bella, let's not forget that the Fountainheads have never pretended that we're ready for all the answers. There are certain truths that in themselves are as dangerous as any advanced technology.
I know that, Jim. I've been hearing the same story for years. Maybe I believe it, too. But now and then there are things you absolutely have to know.
It would be a mistake to assume that we have all the answers, McKinley told her.
But you must have some. Let's talk about the cutoff, shall we?
McKinley's fronds invited her to continue.
By all means. There's nothing taboo about it.
You've never actually spelled this out. But in every exchange we've ever had, you've consistently alluded to the fact that you made contact with a human ship launched from Triton, somewhere around the time of the cutoff.
That's what the data tells you.
I'm not talking about the data, Bella said, fighting to hold her temper and nerve in check. I'm talking about what you know. The Fountainheads are a starfaring culture. You've been out here a lot longer than we have, even by the standards of the Thai expansion.
We have starfaring capability, McKinley said, as if that ought to settle her doubts.
Then answer me this. How extensive was your empire, or realm, or whatever you want to call it, when you bumped into the Thai ship? Did any of your kind ever meet any other representative from the expansion? What about ships that were sent out after the cutoff? What happened to them?
His fronds brushed each other in obvious agitation, like the arms of an anemone stirred by some sudden marine tide.
These are problematic questions. That's why I'm asking them.
Our territory is large. It encompasses a volume of space containing many solar systems.
Put some numbers on that for me, McKinley. Are we talking hundreds, thousands, millions, or what?
The three aliens squirmed. Flashes of ruby red and emerald green from their deeper frond layers signaled some frantic exchange of visual signals.
I have always striven to be straight with you, Bella, McKinley said at length.
So why can't you just tell me?
Our realm encompasses hundreds of thousands of systems.
His tone became probing.
Why is this of such immediate and pressing interest, Bella?
Because it's odd to me, she said, that you only ever chanced upon one ship from the Thai expansion. Would it make much difference if we had encountered more?
Possibly. She shrugged non-committally. Then tell me about the musk dogs. Do they have a realm as well?
Bella did not wait for McKinley's answer, for she was certain now that she would hear nothing resembling the truth.
And the other species? The ones you've as good as admitted are stashed away elsewhere in the structure. What about them? What kind of empires do they have? Hundreds of thousands of star systems like you?
Where are all these star-faring species, McKinley? Why didn't we see any sign of these jostling empires when we looked out into the sky from Earth? Why did it all look so damned empty out there?
You saw the spiker structure? The Fountainhead pointed out.
Yes. One alien artifact around one star system, in one direction of the sky, 260 light-years away. Made, incidentally, by beings we've still not seen. Where are they, McKinley? Where are the Spikens, after all this time?
Jim Chisholm clapped his hands. Okay, maybe we should wrap things up here.
I'm not done, Bella said.
Yes, you are, Bella, Chisholm said, with a sudden and uncharacteristic firmness. You've said your piece. You've expressed reasonable concerns. McKinley, in turn, has made clear his reservations about revealing everything you'd like to know. You must respect that, as well.
Would an adult answer every question a child asked?
Of course not. It would be damaging.
Maybe I should have started with you, she said sourly, as you obviously see things from such a lofty perspective.
You'd have learned nothing from me you haven't already learned from McKinley.
The difference is I can always tell when a man is lying. Even you, Jim.
He looked at her with something like pity, shot through with love and compassion.
If I did lie to you, Bella, do you honestly imagine I wouldn't have your best interests at heart?
I have a right to know the truth.
So do the citizens of Crabtree and Greater Janus, he countered. Have you told Gabriela Ramos what happened to old Buenos Aires? Have you told Mike Pasqualucci about the monster his son became?
That's not the same thing, Bella said, brimming with her own wounded self-righteousness. You can't say that's the same thing.
It's all the same, Jim Chisholm said.
He moved to turn his back on her, like a teacher let down by a promising pupil. Call me when you've calmed down, Bella. Then perhaps we can make some progress.